seeing all these different movies and like almost in this different kind of world. It's an experience I would recommend everyone try at least once, although it is technically against the rules. So be sure to do it in a nice legal manner, as if that's possible.
So basically, you didn't hear it here.
Welcome back to Qualified-ish, the bi-weekly podcast that talks all about movies and TV shows created by qualified creators, but hosted by an unqualified lover of film. I am your host, Kira Menez. This week, I am joined by my high school We the People teacher, Mr. McBride, who also currently teaches U.S. history. When I was in his class my senior year, we constantly talked about different movies and TV shows, always recommending what the other person should watch. Today we are here to discuss the importance of the presence of movie theaters in a world of streaming services. Thank you so much, Mr. McBride, for joining me today. I'm really excited to talk about movie theaters with you.
I am excited to talk about movie theaters as well. I am happy to be here.
Great. So I'm going to start with some questions that I ask every guest on my podcast. So what is your favorite TV show to date?
That's tough. Do your podcast guests usually only give one?
No, never. Not yet.
Well, my overall favorite, if I had to pick one, would be the 2004 reimagining of Battlestar Galactica, which was a tough show to be a fan of when it was airing, primarily because of its title. You know, it just sounds like the nerdiest thing ever. And especially that was simultaneously when The Office was airing. So you would have Dwight, you know, coming in and talking about Battlestar Galactica, Bears beats Battlestar Galactica. And so people assumed it was this show full of like, you know, goopy aliens and weird out there science fiction, when in reality, it was this very somber, military drama that basically imagines a world in which we very realistically went to space. We realistically created artificial intelligence that eventually rebelled against us, and the war between humans and the artificial intelligence that they created. So it has a very passionate following for those people that know it, but it's definitely something that was tough to be a fan of at the time.
Yeah, I definitely only know that from The Office. Like,
Most people do. Yeah.
And what about a movie?
My favorite movie has never changed. It's always been The Truman Show, which is a movie I saw when I was like 5 years old. It's you know, came out in the late 90s, and I saw it shortly after it released. For those not familiar, it's a movie in which Jim Carrey plays this character named Truman, who unbeknownst to him is living inside of a giant dome that has been purpose built specifically to create an artificial world that he inhabits. Everyone he knows is an actor, and their job is to film this nonstop reality show that is chronicling a life. And it touches on the implications of that weird type of scenario. And it also deals with him, you know, coming to terms with it and slowly realizing that something in his world is wrong. It's a movie that was extraordinarily ahead of its time. You know, now when I describe it to people now, they often tell me, oh, that sounds like an episode of Black Mirror. Yeah, it does. It sounds like an episode of Black Mirror 20 years before Charlie Booker thought of Black Mirror in the first place. So it was incredibly ahead of its time. I could watch it today and still enjoy it and love it. I could watch it over and over and over again. I used to show it to students. Like when I first started teaching AP World History at Foothill, I used to show it to students immediately after the AP test. And I would always have a lot of kids coming in like, what is this thing we're going to watch? What's happening? And then I remember my first year showing it, it was like an extended block period. And we got to within 20 minutes of the ending, right in the kind of the climactic. I don't know if you've seen it. Have you seen it?
Oh yeah, I've seen it.
He's on the boat. We're in the climactic portion, and I had to cut it off. And I have never had my students come closer to full on rebellion against me as a teacher. So it's a movie that everyone gets into, even if they personally have not seen it.
Oh, I love that movie, and I watched that in fifth grade with my class. So that's funny.
So sometimes I'll watch things and be like, damn, that was a good idea. Like, I wish I created that. So is there something like that for you? Have you seen something that you're like, oh, I wish I did that?
You know, I would say that the ones that I would be drawn to, the moments where I've had that idea of, oh, I wish I had that idea, it tends to be those moments in time when you have a movie that comes out that was made on a true shoestring budget, like for no money. Mm-hmm. And somehow manages to break through. The classic example is the Blair Witch Project. Have you seen the Blair Witch Project?
Yeah, I have.
The Blair Witch Project doesn't play as well now mm-hmm. as it did when it came out. But literally, it was these college kids that had the idea of, what if we film a movie that is supposed to be the chronicle of a documentary team going into the woods and trying to find this witch? And you know, all the scary stuff that happens in the movie, like, they're inside their tent and they hear noises outside. Like, that's actually the director of the movie, like, holding a boombox up with playing like scary sounds. And the fact that it played so well and was marketed in such a way that suggested it was real. It ends up, like, it had a budget of, I don't even know, it's like $10,000, maybe mm-hmm. a tiny, tiny budget. It grosses over $100 million. It's like that type of idea, that type of breakthrough. I mean, the same thing happened about a decade later with Paranormal Activity. You know, that was also a very small scale, small budgeted film. It was marketed very intelligently and it ended up grossing an insane amount of money as a result. So, I mean, if you're those filmmakers, those college age filmmakers who went out to essentially create a student film and ended up creating a phenomenon, yeah, I'm jealous of you.
Yeah. Getting a little into our actual discussion about movie theater is just starting off with like basic questions. So we're going to start off with, why are they so important? Why do you think movie theaters are so important? And do you think they're essential?
Well, yeah. I mean, I wouldn't have picked this topic if I didn't think movie theaters were essential. I think it has a lot to do with human psychology, actually. My wife and I watched the movie War Horse last night. I don't know if you're familiar with that film.
I haven't seen it.
It came out in like 2011. It's the story of World War I with the centerpiece of this horse that like ends up transferring to multiple owners. And I'm watching it and I get distracted, you know, I end up on my phone. I'm reading the news and then I look up and I'm like, oh, what? I missed that part mm-hmm. or something like that. And oh, I'm not entirely sure about that. And you get to these shots in the movie where it's like, the horse is running through the trenches of World War I and these bombs are going off behind it and it's like lighting it up. And it's a combination of when you're in the theater, you're in that moment in a way that really can't be replicated at home. Sure, you can turn off all the lights in your house. You can sit uncomfortably close to your TV if you want, but you're in that moment in a theater in a way that really can't be replicated in the home. And those distractions are really cut out when you're in the theater. Do people still try to look at their phones and whatnot in the theater? Sure, but it's considered, you know, impolite. So the distractions are really cut down and you're able to really kind of be in that moment. Plus, there's this whole other element of, and this is not so much, I mean, obviously all theaters are closed right now, but, you know, when you get that energy in the crowd, like that can be a big difference too. The movie Little Miss Sunshine came out in like 2004. I remember seeing it in theaters and thinking it was the funniest thing I had ever seen. I remember I was like crying with laughter. And I remember being like, I can't wait to buy this on DVD, go home and show it to my parents. We're just going to be laughing our heads off. And we went home. And if you actually, have you seen that one?
No, I've been wanting to watch it though.
Okay. It's a good movie, but it's a movie that is very like, it's kind of quieter and a little slower paced. There's funny mm-hmm. parts, but it's a slower paced and it's more of like, that's kind of intelligent kind of moment. But if you're surrounded by a crowd in a theater, it enhances that. It enhances comedy. And at the same time, it enhances horror. Like if you go and you're watching a scary movie and you see people screaming, I remember I saw Sinister in theaters.
Oh, I wish I saw that in theaters. Oh.
Yeah, I saw Sinister in theaters. And I remember there were these girls, like almost middle school age girls. I don't know how they got in there without an adult present, but these middle school age girls in front of us, and they literally fell out of their seats at one point because they jumped so violently. Like those elements are something that is very inherent in movie theaters and you really lose at home. You can replicate it as well as you can, but you really lose a lot of it. I mean, what are your thoughts on the essential nature of theaters?
Oh, I think they're so essential. And I feel like it's different between like our ages, because like people my age will be like, oh, let's just watch it at home. And I'm like, no, let's please go. Because I think, because we're so distracted, especially like my generation, by technology, you're totally right. I definitely agree. And my favorite thing to watch in movie theaters are horror movies, because they're literally the funnest crowd ever, because people are literally jumping out of their seats. And I don't really go to see horror movies that much because I can't find anyone to go with, because everyone I know either hates horror movies or they're not around. I have this one friend, Lorette, love going with her, but she's never around. So I don't know. I think it makes the movie more enjoyable being in like a crowd of people and you see their reactions, but at the same time you get like the negative aspect with people on their phones, and I hate it, or people talking. I hate that. Like, please be quiet. The movie is starting. If you want to talk, watch it at home. I think like that has significantly changed. I feel more recently where people are talking.
Yeah. You know, behavioral standards in theaters can be a nightmare.
Yeah. But do you think like we'll ever have like theaters will ever go out of style because of, you know, streaming services?
Pre-COVID, I would have said no.
Yeah.
But the nature of how much theaters have been disrupted by COVID-19, because it's understandable on all fronts. I don't know how much closely you've been paying attention to the story of like what's been happening with theaters and the release of films during the COVID era, mm-hmm. but it started with Trolls World Tour, which is not a movie I have any interest in, but mm-hmm. it was supposed to be, you know, a wide release film coming out in the spring, right around March, right when everything hit. And they ended up, Universal, the studio behind it, ended up releasing it direct to digital for like $20. And AMC, one of the largest theater chains in the country, immediately like cut ties with Universal and was like, how dare they? Because it's a very sacred thing between a studio and a theater chain to have what they call the window. Theaters run these movies for a certain period of time, then there has to be a gap, and then they're available on home for digital. And that's one of the things that in the minds of theater owners has always protected the value of theaters, because you know that you're only going to be able to see the movie in this place. It's one of the reasons why, as Netflix has expanded into trying to put some of their movies in theaters in a very limited capacity, they don't have access to a lot of theaters, because they refuse to give that window. So Netflix always insists that, oh, they need it needs to be in theaters and on our platform at the same time. And most theater owners would just say, no chance in hell are we going to do that. But some of the more recent news, AMC and Universal, same players on the stage, just struck a deal to tighten that window significantly. They're shrinking it over time. And so once that window goes away, that's when I start fearing for the longevity of movie theaters overall. Do I still think that theaters will survive in some form? Yeah. There are enough people that really take movies seriously, the so-called like cinephiles of the world, that are going to want that theatrical experience. There's enough people out there that it's going to happen. What I mostly fear for is, are movie theaters going to become a thing of like major urban population centers? Like, will we eventually get to the point where the only theater you can go to is in San Francisco or in Chicago or something like that? Like, you have to go to a major city in order to be able to see a movie. I could see that scenario playing out, but I don't think we're not there yet. And I certainly hope that we never get there, but that's kind of the main thing I do fear.
Yeah. And I feel like with COVID, it's not helping anything, because how are they supposed to get money? Like, how are they supposed to stay open after all of this? Like when is after all this, first of all? But also, how are they supposed to stay open? And I've been watching tons of movies, and just like, obviously, I can't see it in theaters. So I'm watching a bunch of movies on streaming services, and I'm getting more used to it. And like, the fact that people are trying to like to keep their movies going through theaters is like really difficult, because when are we supposed to go see them? Because we can see with like Tenet, right, that they'll probably release Tenet in international countries before in America. So how is that I don't know. It's going to be crazy, because it's going to be released outside of America, and then people are going to illegally download them in America, and then it's just going to be like a messed up like box office open. It's going to be really weird. So I don't know. I feel like it's not going to go out of style, but I think COVID is definitely not helping in any way. So I don't know. I don't know how it's going to happen after that.
Yeah. But, I think it's going to be tough. I think they're going to survive in some form, but yeah, because theater chains are struggling. I mean, the Vine in Livermore, its only source of revenue right now is the fact that they're opening for candy sales on weekends. You come buy a collectible cotton candy cup and you get some candy. Like, that's nice. And I do see people coming and going and buying it. But, you know, I hope with the Vine that the people who own the theater outright own the building, because I would hate to see that, you know, an independent theater go down. But yeah, I mean, theaters have really no way. The only real alternative that we have right now is drive-in theaters. Have you been to a drive-in film since COVID hit?
Not since COVID, no.
Okay. I have never been to a drive-in film, and let alone since COVID hit. But I've seen enough pictures and videos coming out of, like, the ones they set up in Pleasanton. It just seems like a terrible experience. I mean, it's nice that people get to do it, but it seems like a terrible experience. But I could see theater chains, like, setting up drive-ins as a way to sustain themselves, but they really have not been moving fast enough on that. I mean, the Regal over in Dublin would be great if they could lease out a space to run drive-in stuff, but they just straight up haven't. So, it's tough.
The Regal in Dublin is actually, what are they doing? They're remodeling right now, too.
Yeah.
I'm like, they're closed and they're remodeling, and we don't even know when it's going to open again, so it's just insane. Is there one movie that you wish you saw in theaters? Like any old movie or anything you missed, maybe?
That's a good question. I'm actually, let me give me a moment here. Let me hop on, because I'm sure there's 1,000 that I would love to have seen in theaters, but I'm curious to just look through some of my most recently watched films. Okay. I got one right off the bat. I recently watched A Wrinkle in Time. Now, was it a good, great movie? Not really. But at the same time, with something with that much visual spectacle pumped into it, it's usually anything that you really feel like deserves the bigger screen because it has, you know, eye-popping or eye-catching visuals. But at the same time, like, one of my greatest, experiences in college, I took one film class in college just for the sake of taking it. And our professor would show us films in a lecture hall environment. So it was kind of replicating a theater, but not quite. And I remember that's how I saw, like, Alien for the first time. And I remember thinking, like, I'm so grateful that I at least get a pseudo theater experience for something like this, because Alien's a wonderful movie, but it's not necessarily all visual spectacle. The monster design obviously is amazing and the set design's amazing, but you're watching it for those shots and that environment, that real feel of immersion. You know, any movie that really feels like deserves to immerse yourself in it, I think deserves the theatrical experience. I just recently watched First Reformed, which was
I love that movie. I just watched it. So good.
Yeah, I just watched it pretty recently. And that movie is literally filmed in a 4:3 aspect ratio. You watch it on a widescreen TV, you got black bars on the left and the right of your screen. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, it's this stark, spare imagery. It's so cold and chilly that, like, I feel like that deserves the big screen. You know, there was a few years ago, a movie came out called, what was it called? The Black Coat's Daughter. Which is another A24 horror film that came out a few years ago. And that's all filmed at, like, this remote school in Canada. And it's like these desolate, like, you know, big empty spaces. And like that kind of bigness really feels like it deserves the theater. I remember when I saw Annihilation in theaters like 2 years ago, Annihilation actually made the news because Paramount, which was releasing it, only released it theatrically in the United States. It went straight to Netflix everywhere else in the world. Have you seen Annihilation?
No, I haven't.
Okay, I won't spoil anything for you then, but Annihilation has some of the most, like, insane, like, fluorescent visual images I've ever seen. I remember sitting in a theater during its climax and being like, thank God I got to see this in a theater. I cannot imagine how much this will lose seeing it on a home screen. So it's visuals or even the cinematography that really feels like you deserve to be immersed in it. That's really the type of thing I think needs to be seen in theaters.
Yeah, I would say... I really wanted to watch Uncut Gems in theaters. I think that movie's like would be so fun in a crowd. I think, what's it called? Portrait of a Lady on Fire would be fantastic. Like literally like the, like If I could watch any one movie in a theater, it'd be that one, because it's just so beautiful, and especially like with the sound, like it's such a good movie. And I went to the Vine, when was it, like a couple weeks ago, because me and Zoe were taking pictures because I was gonna post pictures for this podcast, and it was still there, like the poster was still there, and so was Trolls.
Yeah.
But
faded. The Portrait of a Lady on Fire poster and the Emma poster, both and the Wendy poster, all faded from the sun. They have since replaced them, just with, like,
I saw that
they put a Mulan one in there, a Top Gun one in there. But yeah, Portrait of a Lady on Fire was the last movie I saw before lockdown. And awesome. Yeah, it was amazing, because it's that, you know, that particular movie, for your listeners who have not seen it, is this movie that takes place on an island and almost has no orchestral score to it at all. It has no music throughout most of it. It's mostly just the sounds and the ambient noise. And to be in that space where, like, you're surrounded by it and, like, your ears are waiting for a musical score because that's what you expect from a movie, but it's not there, it makes it just that much more immersive. So yeah, I 100% agree with you.
Do you think generally that we should bring back intermissions?
That's an interesting question. Because yes and no would be my answer, because I think that, is there value in a potential intermission? Sure. You know, people need to use the restroom. It's hard to sit through a 3-hour movie. There was an app that came out in the early days of iPhone called Run Pee. That basically the entire purpose of the app was you could click on a movie that was in theaters and it would tell you, like, what to watch for that would be a good bathroom break. And then you'd go to the bathroom and you could read, like, this is what happened while you were in the bathroom. And it would be like, you have 5 minutes to go to the bathroom. We shouldn't have to do
that. Yeah, that's so ridiculous.
You should be able to use the restroom in the middle of the movie. But at the same time, like, I also think it would break the flow of a lot of movies, you know, especially if you're really into something, if it's really, like, hitting you hard, like, to all of a sudden have the little animated popcorn singing about how you should go get some more snacks would not necessarily be ideal. It would kind of feel like a commercial break. So I can see kind of both sides to it in that respect.
I don't think it's entirely necessary. I think people these days just have, like, the lowest, like, attention span ever, so I think maybe it would be good, just because they would probably want to talk, because everyone talks in movie theaters lately, at least before COVID, everyone was talking and it was pissing me off, so maybe they could talk. But I don't know, I think it's not entirely necessary. Like, I don't think it's gonna happen at all, really. But I was just wondering, because I totally forgot that was, like, a thing, that intermissions were happening. I just totally took it as, like, oh, it happens during plays or musicals, but no, I guess not.
Well, there are a handful of examples of, like, with really long films, like when Quentin Tarantino was debuting The Hateful Eight. Mm-hmm. That's a movie I don't love, but it's he had this 4-hour cut of it that he wanted to show around the country, and it was like this special cut because the studio wanted it to come in at like 2.5. He liked his 4-hour cut, and so they did what was called, like, a special road show of it, where a handful of theaters around the country that were equipped to do it ran the 4-hour cut with an intermission, with, like, an orchestral intermission to continue playing the film's score. Like, for special occasions like that, I could see it. But yeah, it's definitely, like, its own unique thing.
Yeah. And let's say, like, you either see a trailer online or you see a trailer in a movie theater. How likely are you to, like, rent the movie when it becomes available, or go to the theater and see it? Or does it depend on the movie?
It depends on the movie, certainly. This is requiring me to cast my brain back to a pre-COVID era. So, last summer, you know, a year ago, I experimented with, I forget what they called it. It's the AMC Stubbs Plus package or whatever. I lived in Fremont and the closest theater to me was an AMC theater. And basically it was like the more rational version of MoviePass when that was a thing, where, like, you pay $25 a month, you can see 3 movies a week. It was summertime. I wasn't doing a whole lot, so I would just go to the theater constantly and just see, like, whatever. That's how I saw Ugly Dolls. Like, I just saw whatever. And so in that respect, just like, oh yeah, am I interested in seeing the 2019 Hellboy? Sure, whatever. But, you know, when it comes to, like, oh, is a new movie coming out, it can be tough to judge from a trailer. You know, it usually associated with, like, a lot of the pre-release hype surrounding it. Do I feel like this is a movie I need to see in theaters? If it's a movie I want to see, I usually want to see it in theaters. I don't care what it is. Even if it's like a romantic comedy that has no interesting cinematography, it's like, okay, fine. I'm going to see it in theaters. If it's a movie, I'm kind of like, eh, go either or, then that's usually the ones that you rent or see a little bit down the line. Yeah, I mean, it's kind of depends on the situation, depends on the movie.
I think I feel the same way because, like, why not? I guess, like, the movie theater is accessible. I'll go watch it. I want to see it. But if I see, like, a stupid movie and I'm like, I want to watch that, but I really don't feel like paying for it. Like, okay, the other day I watched, what was it? Sonic the Hedgehog.
And how was that for you?
Honestly good. Like, okay. Honestly better than I expected. And I actually really enjoyed it. Like, me and my brother were really shocked when we actually liked it, but it was pretty good. But if I see something like that where it's like, I don't know about that, I'll probably watch it at home. The other thing is I try to avoid trailers because trailers are stupid to me unless they're like ambiguous. I feel like trailers reveal way too much of the movie. So I try to avoid that unless I'm in a theater, then I'm watching the trailers. But for the most part, if I know like the cast sounds good, I'm interested in like how the director is going to take this concept, I will probably go see it in theaters. But for you, what do you qualify as a good theater experience?
Well, it's kind of hard to talk about the good without talking about the bad, because a good theater experience requires an absence of those things that make a bad theater experience. And I'll give you a great example. I saw A Quiet Place when it came out in theaters. And that was a pretty big movie. A lot of people saw it. It did pretty well in theaters. And the screening that my wife and I happened to go to was sold out. It was a full screening. And we ended up sitting next to a couple that would not shut up, would not shut up for the duration. And considering that's a movie that literally depends on silence, yeah, like that's the whole point, it definitely took a lot out of it. It's one of the reasons why I don't like assigned seating at movie theaters. Mm-hmm. I know that's all the rage nowadays that like, oh, you get your assigned seating so you can pick your seats. For me, when I would go to a theater, you know, pre-assigned seating, I always insist on like not just like a few seats between me and the next person. I insist on like a blast radius, like a circle of like 15 seats in every direction that no one is sitting in, because I cannot stand, you know, sitting next to people that are insensitive or rude.
Okay, well, did they stop talking? Did you tell them to stop talking?
We all shushed them a couple of times, but okay. It didn't stop them. Yeah, I mean, I insist on like, yeah, sitting nowhere near anybody, because people just aren't like, it's something I've struggled with for a long time. Like the very notion of, you should know what the expectations are of behavior in a theater, because it's not only for you, but it's for other people. You know, the best theater experiences are the people that are into it, the people that are respectful, that are quiet. You can laugh. You can scream if you want to. I've had great moments in a theater where someone shouted back at the screen. That can happen sometimes. That's a part of what makes a good live experience. But the best theater experience, honestly, it's either when I'm able to pretty much remove myself from anyone else and just kind of be in my own space, or it's that extremely, extremely rare kind of theater experience where it's a very full theater, but everyone's into it and everyone's super engaged with the movie and you feel that energy. When you get that like locked in, respectful crowd energy that everyone's really like vibing on this movie and you're all getting into it together, that can really add something to the experience. But that's so rare, and it's especially rare now. Just as behavioral standards have declined in theaters. So it's either the most isolated experience is the best experience, or that lottery once in a lifetime, like real crowd energy would be, yeah, the best experiences.
And I feel like, or at least for me, when I watch movies, that like the great crowd energy only comes if you go like the day before it comes out or the day of, or like the same week or the same weekend, because everyone who goes, you just know they've been waiting like the same time you have. You're just like super excited. Everyone's just like there for the hype, and people, some people are dressed up. At least when I see like Marvel movies, there's a bunch of people that are dressed up that like sit in theaters. I think it's the most fun thing. And I think a great example of that is when Captain America gets Thor's like thing, whatever it's called, his hammer.
So you're talking about Endgame.
Endgame. Okay, Endgame.
When Captain America picks up Mjolnir, yeah.
It was like everyone screamed. Like it was the best thing ever because everyone was freaking out. And I think those are the best experiences. But at the same time, if I'm watching a movie and people are obnoxiously talking next to me or in front of me, because oftentimes I'll see groups of people and you just know that they're going to talk the whole time. Like if you're talking during trailers, like constantly, and you're on your phone, I'm like, please, like I've been the type recently, or like whenever I could watch movies in theaters, where it's like I really like the trailers during, before movies, because I think it's really cool. So like people are talking during trailers, it pisses me off. So like if I know that's happening, I'll probably switch seats if I can, or like kind of like what you were saying, I will purposefully like be far away. So yeah.
Oh yeah, watching the trailer in the theater experience is a sacred one, especially when you're with another person, because it's a constant game of, you into that. But at the same time, if you see a lot of movies, as I did last summer, you end up seeing the same trailer over and over again. I swear, if I had to watch that It Chapter 2 trailer one more time, I was gonna rip the screen in half.
Did you watch that movie?
I did eventually see it. I didn't like it as much as the first one, but it was okay.
Me too. So now we're going to go a little bit into like more specific experiences. So what is your earliest theater memory?
I mean, I have vague, half memories of certain things. Like I remember when my family and I saw the Jim Carrey, How the Grinch Stole Christmas, just because I remember like it was really popular for some reason and like it was a big line. But I'd say the earliest specific memory I have is when I was a kid at the theater where I grew up in the North Bay, they used to have like birthday parties at screenings where you could actually like through the theater, they had a party room and like they would set up the party room and you'd go in the theater and you would go in the theater like significantly before the start of the movie, but an employee would actually come in and be like, speak to whatever crowd was in there and be like, "Hey everybody, it's John's birthday," and then they would have the theater sing you happy birthday and whatnot. Now that sounds nice, but I had a birthday party at the theater to see the original Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone when it came out, and you know, my friends and I all sat in there, and the theater employee came in and sang happy birthday and whatnot, and then about 10 minutes later, the theater employee came in again and said, "Ladies and gentlemen, we just wanted to inform you there's certainly no emergency." But then this guy, not an employee, bursts in but the door behind her, runs up and screams, "Fire everybody out." So we then evacuated out the emergency exit of the theater and had to stand in the parking lot as the fire department came. It was just some greasy like popcorn or whatever that started a little bit of smoke. It wasn't anything serious, but they had to clear it out, and then the theater had to come out and give us all replacement tickets. And so the only showing that we could get a replacement ticket for was the 11 p.m. showing. I'm young at this point. I'm like, oh boy, I get to stay up late. And so we eventually went back and saw that. So yeah, early experience of a little emergency in a theater.
I had one for like the birthday thing you were saying. I had one like that, and it was, I remember, it was Bolt, the movie Bolt. You know what I'm talking about? The one with the dog? The
John Travolta starring film Bolt, absolutely.
Yes. So and I was...
Wasn't it Hilary Duff, too?
I think it was Miley Cyrus.
Miley Cyrus, that's right, yeah.
I remember we did that like whole like private theater thing. We were just like hanging out. And we like had cake after, and I just remember watching this and be like, wow, I'm in the theater with my friends, and it's private, and it's so fun, and there's a freaking dog on the screen that's running around and has magical powers. Like, this is so exciting. But also the same year, I'll never forget this one because it's a wonderful movie, but I watched WALL-E in theaters, I think this was like the early, I think this one was the earliest one. I watched it with like my second grade class and we all went to the movie theater together. And I remember everyone just like being amazed by it. Like it was just like, wow, like there's this thing that's picking up trash and like now they're on a spaceship with a bunch of fat people. Like this is so cool. Like everyone was just freaking out. And it, I love that movie. Like that movie is still great.
Wally is a movie that deserves the theater. Absolutely.
Yes.
It was a very, very transcendent film. And yeah, as you speak, you reminded me, like my elementary school class, we got taken to the movies once as a field trip and we saw the completely forgotten film. So I don't blame you if you don't know this one, Disney's Dinosaur, which came out in like 2000. It's a terrible film, but it was notable at the time for using actual live action backgrounds. So they actually filmed the backgrounds and they CGI'd in the dinosaurs over them. It looks terrible now, but it was like all cutting edge at the time. Okay. And all I remember was that they took us to the theater, but they wouldn't buy us any snacks, which I get because it's like they're teachers and they're going to the theater. But I had never sat in through a movie without snacks before. It felt wrong. I hated it more than just the movie. So,
yeah, I never really was much of like a, oh, I have to get snacks or else I can't watch the movie type of person. I was always just like, I'm just here to see the movie and the movie only. So, yeah, I never really thought it was necessary, which is actually going back to like what we were talking about earlier about like a good theater experience. Like, do you still do that? Do you still like get snacks like every time?
I need popcorn. I need my Diet Coke.
Diet Coke. Like, yeah.
It's just standard for me. Like, yeah. I'm not like, oh boy, this popcorn is the greatest thing I've ever tasted. It's just like, that's part of it for me. So yeah. I always need that.
Yeah. Okay. And what about your worst theater memory?
Yeah, I got a pretty specific one actually.
Okay.
I might've told you this story before actually. The movie was called The Unborn. It is on Netflix, I think still. It was a terrible, horror film that came out around 2008. It mostly got marketed because it was written by one of the people who was credited as writing The Dark Knight. And so they were able to market it as like from the writer of The Dark Knight. But then the movie itself is atrocious, but that's not what made the theater experience bad. What made the theater experience bad, it was the worst group I've ever seen in a movie theater. They were middle school aged kids. They sat, and there were like 30 of them. And they all sat in the front row of the theater. And it was pandemonium, like to a degree I've never seen before or since in a theater. Like they weren't just talking. They were yelling. They were yelling to each other. They were yelling, all over the place. They were running up and down the aisles. They were climbing over the seats. They were throwing things at each other. They were openly laughing at any attempt to movie to be scary, completely breaking the immersion of the film. It's not a good movie, but it at least deserves the chance to like make me jump. But they screaming and like, I don't like Mystery Science Theater 3000, like commentating at the screen as if it was an interactive experience. It went far beyond shushing. People in our the back of the theater where we were standing up and screaming back at them to shut up. People started leaving the theater to get employees. It took employees several minutes to get there. This whole thing lasted about 10-15 minutes into the movie. They actually stopped the movie, which I have never seen before in my life. And they didn't kick the kids out, amazingly enough. What they did was they had two theater employees come in, lecture the kids, and then sit on either side of the aisle for the duration of the film as if they were monitoring the kids' behavior, which I think is very strange. Like, why not just kick them out? But they actually flanked either aisle and made sure that the kids weren't being disruptive, and they started the movie over. I imagine that probably messed up the scheduling for the theater for the rest of the night, but at the same time, they were going to have a full-on revolt of people like demanding their money back if they didn't. So they just kind of acquiesced and gave in. And the kids calmed down, quote unquote, to the point where we could at least watch the movie. They basically went from like
screaming hellscape to just regular annoying, but I have never seen a disruption in the theater to the point where it actually affected the playing of the film, or to the point where they actually had to restart it. That's never happened in my entire life. I've had moments where the movies have been misprojected. When I saw some of the Ghibli films in theaters last year, they ran like stretched to the point where you couldn't read subtitles and we had to go out and tell them to fix the projection. When I saw Hereditary in theaters, it was overly stretched and the bottom part of the image was cut off even after I complained. That's annoying.
Oh, that sucks for that movie.
Yeah, that's annoying. Yeah. But at least that's still, you know, watchable to a degree. But to have kids just full on rebel against the movie is something I've never seen before.
Wow, I've never had an experience like that. I don't think I've ever had an experience where it's like people are screaming and I had to like yell at them to stop talking. I think there have been times where I'm like watching the movie and people are like talking and I'm like, please be quiet. But it's nothing crazy. But there have been times where I have watched something so bad that I'm so tempted to walk out. And one of them was called, it's called After. It's on Netflix now.
Talking about, describe it.
Okay. It's a bad movie. I forgot it in like T-minus 5 minutes after like watching it. It's a romance and it's just, I don't remember anything about it because it's bad. But people like it now because it's on Netflix and people are watching it. But at the time, I was texting Kira.
I have never heard that.
Please don't watch it. I think it's horrible. Called
After is a 2019 American romantic drama film directed by Jenny Gage based on the 2014 new adult fiction novel.
Yeah, it's horrible acting, horrible screenplay. Like, it was just so bad. The editing was bad. And Kira texted me earlier that day and was like, oh, are you busy? And I was like, no. Like, what do you want to do? She's like, oh, you want to see a movie? I was like, sure, what movie are we watching? And she's like, oh, this movie, it has free tickets. And wow. I was like, that is, we walked in knowing it was going to be bad. Like, we just walked in, we knew it was going to be bad. People were talking during the movie. People were laughing for the wrong reasons in the movie. Like, serious moments happened. People were laughing. Like, it was a bad movie. Probably the most disappointing experience was when I think I went to Suicide Squad the day it came out or the day before it came out. So it was like big crowd. People were really excited. I was really excited. Midway through the movie, I was like, this is trash. Like, this is, I hate that movie so much. And I knew when the moment that Will Smith was like, what are we, like some kind of Suicide Squad, that this was like a bad movie. And I was like so close to just crying myself to sleep because I was so excited to watch it.
Yeah, I don't hate Suicide Squad as much as the general consensus is. I know I get that you got those cheesy elements to it, but I don't hate it as much as some people do. But yeah, I mean, in terms of just like straight up like bad movie to see in theaters, I mean, what jumps to my mind is I had a bunch of friends when I was younger insist that they had heard that Meet the Spartans was pretty funny, which is a parody film roughly parodying 300. And they dragged me to the theater to see it. And I remember halfway through the movie, they were begging me to leave because I had driven them to the theater. And I told them, no, you dragged me here. We are staying to the end credits. And so I guess in that respect, I caused a bad theater experience.
That's so funny because, so I wasn't alive when this happened, but my sister and my brother, when they were younger, I think it was the first Spider-Man movie, the one with Tobey Maguire, that came out. And my brother was so excited to watch it. And my brother is younger than my sister. Like, mind you, he's probably like, I want to say maybe he's like 7 or 8 and he's like begging my parents. So he goes and my sister goes with them and my sister just like starts like crying. Like, she's just so upset. She's just so upset about this movie and she's like terrified. And my brother's like so invested and she was just so upset that my parents just like literally had to take them out and my brother will not let it go. That was the reason they didn't continue watching the movie and she's still embarrassed to this day. But I just think it's a funny story because
my wife has told me the story about, and I find this funny because my wife and I have a lot of overlap when it comes to our taste in film, but we also have the movies that are very distinctly mine and the movies that are very distinctly hers. You actually, you've dredged this up in my brain by telling your story. Another great theatrical experience, one of the best I had at that point in my life, 2003's War of the Worlds, the Tom Cruise one, The Steven Spielberg directed War of the Worlds. Have you seen that movie?
No, I haven't.
That movie was astounding to see in theaters. It was so advanced in its technology and in the sound design. Like the way the movie works is that these aliens, you know, they're in these giant pods and they come out of the ground, and Spielberg puts in this like deep thunderous bass sound that was long before Inception, but it kind of sounds Inception-y. And you know, you'll see these pods rising in the distance, you know, doom is coming, and then it's these scenes of pure destruction. I remember I was on cloud nine watching that movie in theaters. It was so incredible to see that experience. My wife has told me that she had the experience of your sibling watching War of the Worlds. The opening scene, Tom Cruise is going out to investigate this strange thing that's happened in his town. The alien starts zapping people. They're literally turning to dust in like a scary way. She has a panic attack, starts crying. Her dad has to take her out of the theater and take her home. So thankfully, none of the members of her family resent her for that. But it's definitely a similar experience.
Oh, my God. Okay, what about your very best theater experience?
Oh, that's easy. That's very easy.
Okay.
There was a theater, was, sadly, I still mourn the loss of it. There was this theater in Pleasant Hill that I used to go to when I was in high school. I used to actually drive up there a lot, about a half hour, 35-minute drive, because it was the indie theater. Like, it was the theater that would carry the movies that the mainstream theaters wouldn't. It's how I saw things like The Hurt Locker, which when it originally came out was in limited theatrical release. So all the mainstream theaters around the Tri-Valley weren't playing it, but that theater out in Pleasant Hill was. And so I used to go there all the time to see all kinds of weird movies. I saw like Safety Not Guaranteed there. I saw like the Swedish version of The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo there. And the way the theater was actually laid out is it was two buildings. You would go to the box office that was on one of the buildings, and they would tell you, okay, follow this line to the other building or follow this line to the other building. And every single time I went to that theater to see a movie, I was seeing it in one of the two buildings. I never went in the other building. I would go to the one building. It was a nice theater, nice enough place, but it was pretty relatively standard. One time I got sent to the other building. Now, this theater was called the Cinedome, and that's where it derived its name from. The other building was the dome part. It was this dome structure that you would go inside. And when I went in there, I realized immediately that what this theater was is a former actual performing arts space. Like, it was actually like a real live theater that they converted to a movie theater. So it's got this like Art Deco molding, these like columns. It's that very like classic theater, like deep red carpeting. The screen itself was basically retrofitted on what was once the stage. It's got like these kind of like chandelier, installations around it. And I'm hoping you've seen this movie, because when I actually tell you the movie that I saw in that space, you'll instantly understand why it was my greatest theater experience. The one movie I was ever sent into that theatrical space to see was Black Swan.
No.
You have not seen Black Swan?
Yeah, I haven't, and I've been wanting to, but it's like nowhere to be found online. Okay. But I don't want to pay for it.
So. That was the one time I was sent in to that theater to see Black Swan. Black Swan, I mean, I'm sure you're aware of it, for your listeners who might not be, is a movie that is about Natalie Portman's character is a ballerina. And it's all about her relentless pursuit of perfection. She's told by a lot of the more unseemly people in her life that she's not good enough, that she's not able to measure up. And she constantly tries to improve herself and become perfect. In the process, Darren Aronofsky, who directed the movie, overlays these elements of horror to it. As almost like a look inside her psyche, but it really is like these scarier moments. There's even a little bit of like grisly body horror that occurs near the end of the film. But so many of those movies' best scenes are the actual displays of the ballerinas, them dancing in a theater space. So to be able to see this film that is all about theatrical performance in this actual theatrical space that clearly was designed for live performance is unlike anything I've ever seen before or since. I mean, I'm not going to spoil anything about the movie, but I'm going to reference the ending in an indirect way. The movie ends with applause. Like the sound of applause and roaring applause and like roses being thrown onto a stage and whatnot. And to hear that echoing around this cavernous theater space, I've never experienced anything like it. That theater has since been demolished. It is now a designer shoe warehouse, and I hate it for that.
No, that's so sad. That's actually amazing. I haven't seen that movie, but I just know, like, I feel like I know what you're talking about. In terms of like why it's so great to watch in that movie theater. That's really exciting. And I didn't know you watched in that theater. That's like so cool. Yeah. I don't have something that cool, geez, but I don't know. All my best theater experiences have been when the crowd is like super hype, I feel like, or what's a good one? I really enjoyed it when I watched it. I think I watched it opening weekend or something, and everyone was enjoying it. Like everyone was laughing and everyone was like screaming, and like it wasn't that scary, but people were like still scared because it's like a giant clown on the screen. I'm trying to think if there's anything else. When I watched The Hunger Games, I was super invested in that. That was a great experience just because, again, everyone was really excited. And actually, I'll talk about that later because I did like a special feature for that. But so what are your thoughts on and experiences for movie hopping and midnight screenings?
Well, I think a lot of these last questions we've covered a little bit tangentially, but to address it specifically, like, you know, the midnight screening, as you said, is it's the peak of energy. I mean, what movie have you seen in a midnight screening? Have you ever?
I think I've seen The Hunger Games midnight screening.
Okay.
Yeah.
For me, it's The Dark Knight and weirdly Pirates of the Caribbean 2. Mm. But again, I don't like Pirates of the Caribbean 2. I think it's a bad movie. But the energy that was in that crowd that night was something that I still remember all these years later. Same goes for The Dark Knight. Those midnight experiences, you know, they're a very unique thing. You're going to get the best energy at that time. And yeah, there's really nothing to compare it to. As for movie hopping, are you a movie hopper, Kira?
No, I'm not.
Really? Have you never done it?
Okay, I'm not with the right people to do it because they're always just like
alone.
Okay, well, this age right now where I'm figuring out that I would love to do that stuff alone, I can't go alone. Okay. And I can't do those things. So yeah, sorry, explain.
That's fair.
Yeah.
Movie hopping is a wonderful experience just because what's so weird about movie hopping is it's usually anchored around two movies. You go to the one you initially bought a ticket for, and then you basically have to bridge the gap between the one you bought a ticket for and the showing of the other one you want to watch. I've never done more than that. So the most fun part actually is the part in between when you're trying to fill that time between those two. That's how I saw Ugly Dolls. That's how I saw 2019 Hellboy. Like you see these weird snippets of movies you might not otherwise be interested in. And you end up spending like an entire afternoon at the theater, and it ends up feeling like this weird immersive experience where you're just like seeing all these different movies and like almost in this different kind of world. It's an experience I would recommend everyone try at least once, although it is technically against the rules. So be sure to do it in a nice legal manner as if that's possible.
So basically you didn't hear it here. But I was going to say, I was going through like movies that came out in like the last 10 years, just like going through like, oh, what have I seen in theaters? What have I not? And I'm like, I was too young to watch any of the movies that I've watched recently, like on streaming websites. And like, I'm realizing that I missed a bunch of it, but like now is the time for me to like actually go see those good movies, not like just there's good animated films, but like, you know, like when you're young, you see like a bunch of animated films. Now is the time for me to do that. And I can't right now. So there's that. I haven't movie hopped, I don't think. For midnight screenings, the closest, I don't think it was midnight, but it was like late. So when The Hunger Games came out, I watched that. It was like in middle school. And then the next year, I did like a double feature where I watched Catching Fire and The Hunger Games. And like those were both on school nights. So I remember like sitting in line and like doing homework. I was with Kira and like a bunch of our friends. We did that. And then I think the next time we watched Mockingjay late at night, and then I didn't like that movie, so I just gave up. But I haven't really done that, but something I have done is buy a ticket for a certain movie and go to a different movie because I couldn't get in. I did that.
Okay, you didn't hear that here.
Oh yeah, you didn't hear that here. But I think it was 2017, so I was not old enough to watch an R-rated film, but I really wanted to watch Baby Driver, so I bought a movie ticket for, I think it was like some shitty, like it was like Valerian, like some crappy like sci-fi thing.
And I've heard good things about Valerian. I have not seen
from
it.
Who? From literally
podcasts I listen to. Okay. That's my primary source of intelligence.
Yeah. That was worth it. There was some worker that kept walking up and down the aisle, and they do that sometimes, but he did it like every 20 minutes, and I was like, bro, I'm here whether you like it or not. Like, he was like looking at us, and I was like, we just want to watch this movie, and it was a good movie. I don't know if you've seen that.
Yeah. The only time, I mean, speaking of like not being able to get into R-rated movies, the only time I ever had to fight that significantly, because my dad would usually go to movies with me. Most of the movies I saw when I was your age, I was with my dad, and so he was kind of my shield to get me into whatever we needed to see.
Yeah.
But and my dad didn't really care what we saw, so I was introduced to some disgusting stuff early on in my life. But the only time I remember I really fell into an issue, because back in the day, I don't know if it's still the case, but it's really only when an R-rated movie comes out that the theater knows has a lot of appeal amongst underage kids. So for me, it was Borat. Borat was like hugely popular when it came out. All the kids wanted to see it, and the theaters were really harsh about clamping down to ensure that you didn't if you were underage. And then I remember when I was older, just a few years ago, Sausage Party, that animated movie about the food. I was well over 17 at that point, but I remember having that smug moment of like, as I was walking to the theater, there was a theater employee carding people, and I saw some kids get turned away. I'm like, oh, well, sorry. I'm an adult that gets to see the movie.
Yeah. It's kind of weird to think about, because when Get Out came, I wasn't old enough to watch it. So we made like a parent come with us, and like sit, like it was like a group of us. And I remember watching that movie and being like, why the hell can't I watch this without like an adult? But I mean, it makes sense. But like, I was just like so pissed, because at that time, like, I was watching a bunch of movies, like, just by myself at home, like, online. And, like, a couple years before that, I had, like, a period of time where I would literally go to the library and get, like, DVDs and, like, just watch all of those movies. Like, I would watch movies, like, on Netflix. I remember, I think I was probably in, like, 8th grade or, like, 7th grade. And I was like, oh, yeah, I'll watch A Clockwork Orange right now. And I was, like, in 7th grade, like, watching this movie. And I was like, oh, my God, this was great, but I'll never watch it again.
I've never seen that.
Really?
That's one of the real big ones that I have not seen.
Really?
My list of big classics that I haven't seen is pretty short at this point, but that is one of those ones that stubbornly stayed on there.
Yeah, well, I probably had just watched The Shining, and I was like, oh, Kubrick. So I watched that one. And then I, for some reason, watched Eyes Wide Shut. This was like, I was young, like 8th grade, maybe. Have you seen that?
Oh. Eyes Wide Shut? Yes, I have.
Okay. I like that movie. That's a good movie. I mean, I feel like this is so different because you've had more experiences in theaters because you're older than me. So like you've had, like, you got to see like all the movies that I'm seeing on streaming websites. But you saw those in theaters, and like, I don't know, I just find that really cool.
Yeah, well, when my parents are divorced, they divorced when I was in elementary school, and basically when my mom and dad separated, my dad's main way of like keeping connected with me was he took me to a movie every week, and we did that for 15 years. And so the only reason we stopped was because his health declined. But you know, we did it every week for 15 years. And so, yeah, I've seen a ton and a lot of movies that like are completely forgettable. And I could tell you the title of, and you'd be like, that movie doesn't exist. But yeah, there's been a ton. And he, just cause he, it was a tradition, like he was willing to see pretty much whatever I wanted to see. And if there was a week that nothing we wanted to see was out, we would still go and end up seeing something that we both didn't really have interest in.
That's how I saw The Lake House. I actually kind of liked the Keanu Reeves film.
So as we close up, I need to do this. I need to throw out a McBride-esque question, because you always give us the Wally question for We the People. This is my question. So aliens have invaded Earth. Okay, they send a panel of 10 judges into a movie theater, and they tell you, put on a movie. If all 10 aliens really enjoy it, they won't blow up Earth. So what movie are you playing and why?
Well, I'll give you the why as I think of the what, because the truth is that, like, I think from the way you're structuring the question, we have to assume you could replace the word alien with just 10 random people. Basically, what you're really asking, if I'm interpreting your question correctly, is what is something you could pull 10 random people off the street and they would all enjoy? Basically, what's the thing with the most mass appeal? And that's a tough question, because there's a part of me that would want to go for, like, just the stuff that has been the biggest in American culture in recent years. Like, I think if you were to play something like, you know, the Avengers to a group of 10 random people, they're probably going to enjoy it. Those movies are not especially deep or, like, intellectual, but they're, you know, like roller coasters. You get on, you have a good time, you watch Thor swing his hammer, the end. In terms of a movie I think is just impossible to dislike, I mean, obviously I have my biases with something like The Truman Show, but at the same time, I mean, honestly, like, there are movies like Best in Show, which came out in, like, the early 2000s. Are you familiar with that one at all?
No, I haven't seen that.
It's a fake documentary about a dog show, and just featuring this quirky cast of characters there's not really much of a plot to it. It's mostly just, like, watching people improvise and kind of have fun and, like, funny moments happen, like that type of thing. At the same time, like, I also think a movie like The Lego Movie is impossible to dislike, because it's just so, you know, designed to connect with people. And, like, the fact that the message of that movie is ultimately about, like, you know, play should be based on your imagination. And, like, you know, people shouldn't make overly complicated Lego figures and stuff like that. that in a way the movie was an advertisement against itself, which is what makes it the greatest act of brand-associated movie-making ever, compared to something like Transformers. But yeah, it would just be something with ultimate mass appeal. So maybe something like a Marvel movie, or something like the Lego Movie, or, if I'm getting my own weirdness in there, something like The Truman Show.
I would say, I feel like it's so hard to hate on Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. Like, how can you hate on that movie? Like, I feel like that would be a good one, because everyone likes a good animated film, and that one, like, I feel like is so elevated.
The only strike against that movie, honestly, is I saw that movie in IMAX, and it's genuinely tough for your eyes, especially on a big screen for, like, the first 10 minutes, but you get used to it. But that animation style is weird to see for the first time, but that's, like, the only point I would knock off that movie.
Yeah, I didn't watch, I watched that in theaters, but I don't think I watched that IMAX, because I remember being like, I feel like I would have a headache or something. But yeah,
I saw it because it had gotten such good reviews, and it was from some of the creative minds behind the Lego Movie. I'm like, hey, I know that this is going to be a good time. I remember asking some of my friends to go, being like, hey, you want to see this new Spider-Man movie? And they're like, really? Why am I gonna watch another Spider-Man movie? I'm like, no, this was supposed to be good. And indeed, everyone came around on it.
Okay, well, I have a final question that I ask all my guests. What is one more thing you want to see more in TV series or films? Now, this can be like, maybe you feel like you have a, like, a plot idea, or if there's, like, a genre that you like, or I had one person tell me something they want to see more in the film industry. So what do you think?
There are plenty of examples of a director who is given license to realize their own vision, and it is terrible. And you realize, oh, wait, maybe the reason why I like this director is because they had someone in the room who was willing to edit them down and learn to make their vision more streamlined. Best example of that is George Lucas. You know, the original Star Wars is very much not his exclusive vision. If you look at the original, like, plans he had to make Star Wars, it's bonkers. absolutely bonkers. The initial cut of the movie was terrible. It was saved as a result of people who told him, no, you need to find the good ideas here and cut out the bad ones, and you need to edit out some of the fluff because maybe people don't want to watch a 2.5 hour movie. Sometimes that works. You know, I'm sure I'm going to mispronounce his name, but Denis Villeneuve, the
oh my God, Villeneuve, I think
he is an example of a director who I think has been given that ability to realize his visions as he sees them, and we like it. I mean, Blade Runner 2049 did not have to be 2.5 hours long, but I think that every minute of that movie is vital to that movie. And so sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. But to really get around to answering your question, I think the best thing that I would like to see more of in movies and TV in general is patience. And when I say that, I mean that, like, you have to understand that audiences are willing to take a bit of a slower ride if it's going to have a satisfying payoff. You know, one of the things I hate so much, and you say you avoid trailers, so maybe you have not experienced this as much as I have, but like there's a trend in recent years with trailers. Like if you were to watch a trailer on YouTube, like, oh, let me watch the trailer for the new Christopher Nolan or whatever. And you click play on the video, and what happens is you get this 4-second like preview before the preview even starts. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I do.
It's like this brief little preview, and then at the end it says like trailer now, and I'm like, yeah, I know, I clicked on the trailer, I'd like to watch the trailer please, and then the trailer starts. The reason why they do that is because if it ends up like on a Facebook feed or like an Instagram feed, something like that, as people are scrolling by, they're just going to see like this quick shot of it, and then maybe they'll stick around to watch the whole trailer. And so what it does is it turns movies into much more bite-sized things where it's like, don't think about it. Explosions. Explosions are happening. There's a funny line that's happening here. It's, you know, and whatnot. And in the end, you know, and I might have answered this question differently if I was 10 years younger. And I think it's something that happens more as you get older. You realize that occasionally it's worth it to really like give yourself over to something and understand that you're going to get to a good place in the end, you know. But at the same time, there are downsides to that. Like my wife is watching that new Netflix show Cursed right now, which I'll sit and watch an episode with her. And I'm like, nothing happened in that episode. Like, what is even like? Oh my God! Like, there's and I don't buy into the fact that this is going to go somewhere. But if I'm sitting down to bring back up like something like Portrait of a Lady on Fire, like that's, you know, it's a romance film. I'm not spoiling that based on the poster and the trailer and whatnot, but it takes an hour for the romance to happen. You know, you're going to spend some time immersed in this world for a long time. There's a movie that came out like 10 years ago. And as a fan of horror, I'd recommend you seek it out, called House of the Devil, which is this ultra, ultra slow burn film about this woman that goes to this house. She's supposed to be house sitting for a night. And basically nothing happens for the entire movie other than like weird sounds and her going to investigate them. It goes crazy in the last 15 minutes, but basically nothing happens to the entire movie. And it's a good movie, you know, to recognize that people are willing to give over of themselves and really invest themselves in a story. With the understanding that you're gonna get a payoff in the end, is something that, you know, theaters have gotten, movies in general have gone away from, because you want to be able to sell it in that quick little format. I mean, that's why Hollywood had the sheer hubris to even envision something like Quibi, that stupid app that they announced that is like, people want to watch movies in 5-minute chunks. No, they don't. That's why Quibi doesn't have any subscribers. People are all, you know, audiences are always smarter than you give them credit for. And a lot of movies have gotten away from that. So,
do people actually use that app?
You know, I tried the free trial just as a joke, pretty much.
Yeah.
I'm like, what the hell is this? Plus, I used to like Reno 911. They had Reno 911 on there.
Mm-hmm.
And I tried it, and it was just like, it's so vapid and just like, just designed for, like, it's designed for, it is what a group of middle-aged white executives in a Hollywood office somewhere think the teens would be into. it's the ultimate expression of that. It's the ultimate expression of we know what teens like more than the teens do. You like shows like Riverdale, right? Let's make something that looks like that, but also is terrible. So yeah, it was a disaster from day one.
But thank you so much for joining me today. This was a really great conversation.
It was my pleasure, Kira.